The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now, and of course, you can see us both live in video. I may be a little... Well, I don't know. I've just come back from Tenerife Port. I tell you what, the weather's
You look very brown. You still look very toned and brown.
Yeah, but do you know what? It's nuts. There's a four-hour flight away. I always like to look at the weather app back home, and it's every day, 10 degrees raining, 10 degrees raining. And, you know, out there, it was like 28 degrees sunny every day. So it was nice. In fact, a little too hot. But I do, you don't want to complain about that.
I would agree. It's absolutely terrible. It's even worse, actually, because my my wife and my two daughters have all gone out to New Zealand for 2.5 weeks and are sort of like travelling down around the South Isles. So they've got beautiful landscapes and scenery. Yeah. Plus, it's just blue skies as well. Yeah, and I'm sitting here in Birmingham. Bucketing down. So
no,
you're right.
What's going on in the weather? Hopefully we're taking a turn, like I say, you know, into Easter. Spring is upon us. I do find that for a while the winter and the spring have been fighting and the winter's been winning. And hopefully as time goes on, it's like the market, stock market. In the end, the market goes up. But you can be forgiven for thinking it always goes down. If you've had a bear market for like 18 months, then it does feel like that. But longer term, you know, it plays out. In fact, you know, while I'm on holiday, I don't really, you know, keep up with the macro side of it. I come back last night and I saw, like, on CNBC saying, oh, heightened fears of recession are now playing out on some data, and I don't know what the data was. So what was that? What was the data that was coming out that people starting to worry again about recession?
Yeah, well, I think you've just got to put it into a bit of context. Let's be clear about it. The markets have actually gone up in quarter one. They roared in January and February, had a bit of a bump with the banking crisis, but still ended up. I mean, you know, you had the S&P up sort of like, you know, 6% in the quarter, and it's still trading on around about 18 times, you know, price earnings. So it's not exactly cheap. So yes, we've had a bit of a sort of like, you know, a bit of a sell-off in the last few days, but I actually don't think it's a sort of like a major capitulation, certainly not at the moment. The concern when you're talking about with sort of economic data is a lot of being sort of PMIs in manufacturing. I think it's 5 or 6 consecutive months of contraction in the manufacturing side. Services has also started to cool. But the good thing is that there's no doubt about it. Inflation is coming down. I don't think anybody can doubt that. We are going to get the non-farm payrolls on Friday from the US, and that should confirm that we're going to see some wage reduction. It's about sort of 4.5%. I mean, not really slamming down, but certainly sort of cooling off. So on that basis, if we've actually won the fight over inflation, then you've got to look at sort of like, you know, what's the Fed going to do? And the Fed, to a certain extent, has intimated that it's going to hold rates for longer. And it may push up by another sort of quarter basis point at its May the 3rd meeting, I think it is, and then hold them for the rest of the year. But the market has nothing like it. It just says, forget it, mates. You know, we're going to see, you're going to be cutting aggressively. And they've already baked in a sort of 75 basis points or a percentage base points for the rest of the year. And then continuing down in 2024. The big sort of like, you know, conundrum facing the markets at the moment is what are they going to be the aftershocks of the banking crisis? And I think, I mean, I had a really good video, and I think people should have a look at it. I spoke to Chris Watling of Longview Economics and Edmund Shing of BNP Paribas earlier the week, and they really were excellent in terms of the sort of the macro shape of it. And they pointed to the M2 money supply out in the States. And when you look at the charts from the St. Louis Fed Reserve, you just see it's basically like a, it's like the Alpine ski slope. You just see this M2 money supply coming down and tightening credit from the banks, from the regionals. And I think also what's, you know, you look at sort of like early signals, you know, sort of like leading indicators. And another one I'd point investors to have a look at to continue every single week is the, I think it's the Atlanta GDP Now reading, which say comes out at least once a week, if not more. And it's actually rolled over quite hard in the last sort of like, you know, 10, 15 days from a prediction of 3.5% GDP growth in Q1 to 1.7. So it's halved. Now, who knows whether that is a trend or not? But when you could just come in big picture to your concerns, the market is getting spooked by these leading indicators of PMIs. You've got your senior loan officers and the banks basically saying we're seeing tightening credit. You've got the M2 money supply, which is basically like, you know, the Alpines. And you've got, you know, the GDP Now also coming down. who knows where we're going to be? We're going to, the next big, big data point is going to be the earnings season. I don't know what your thoughts are heading into, because that's going to start with the banks next Friday, I think. It usually starts with sort of, you know, JP Morgan and Citibank. So I don't know what you think in terms of that whole earnings season. Because that's going to, once you see the earnings, that will drive where the market is going to go.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It's just very interesting. Just looking at, saying, talking about, you know, predictive indicators. And like I said, the inverted yield curve has been sort of predicting this for a while, and and we've had sort of data points come out from the Fed about, you know, inflation maybe coming down. The market sort of rallies, and you have sort of a hot point or something, and it goes back down. I just think how much this is baked in already. You know, like I said, the market has been down, going sideways for a while, and is it a case where it's pretty much almost priced in, and we'll just go in a range?
Not on the S&P it isn't, not on 18 times it isn't. Not with basically, but obviously it depends on where your cost of capital is and your borrowing cost. But we know, you know, from the companies that we look at, if you'd have to sort of like, you know, raise debt finance, it's usually convertible and it's usually warrants on top. And it's at 10%, so it isn't exactly sort of start ravenly cheap, is it? And then let's just put ourselves into the position of a sort of like a, you know, a small or micro cap or even mid cap company. If you go to the bank at the moment and it wants to basically increase its liquidity, is it going to roll over your debt? And the answer to that is question. It may do, but rather than being a damn certainty that it was before, it's sort of like it's going to start saying, okay, well, pay us back some of it and I'll give you 50% of it. And then you've got to go cap and hand to somebody else. And it all depends on how much liquidity is going to be given and credit given by the banks. And I think where the market is getting a bit worried is that actually if they all start to tighten, which is what the M2 money supply is saying, then it means that it's going to be really tough for companies to roll. It's like basically you get your mortgage, 80% loan to value or whatever it is. You come to renew it after 2 years and say to the bank, can I have another 80%? And they say, no, you can have 50%. What do you do then? You know, so you have to find 30% of your equity somewhere in your house. Well, that's what companies have got to do. They're going to go and raise 30%, and that's convertible debt at the moment. So that is the issue.
Yeah, there's definitely, like I said, fallout, isn't it? And no one knows, you know, how much this is going to affect. But do you know what? Even looking at average, like I said, the S&P, for example, you're right there. I mean, looking at average falls for recessions, this is going back to 1928. And if you looked at them, this would take the S&P to an average fall, you know, of all, you know, with recessions, with and without recession bear markets. It should be down to 3165. What are we at now? 4090, pretty much, from the S&P. And so, but the average is recessions only. This is just bear markets with and recessions, but or this is just recessions only. This is 2782. And they last for 16 months on average. So we're not
Have you got enough sort of data there, though? I mean, is 100 years enough there, Justin?
Well, 1928, exactly. That's from, in fact, I've seen you sort of tweet out, it's a guy from Charlie Bililio, is it on Twitter? You know that guy, I think you looked at his inflation. He puts lots of detail on charts.
Oh, okay.
It's worth following him because all he does is spreadsheets on data. And you can see trends in there, and it's phenomenal. So I just pinpointed this in the chart. We're way above, you know, average falls on 100. That's the thing, isn't it? It's odd to see. When you look back and you look at data, so how far back should you actually go? Because the markets have changed massively. Liquidity, the speed of transactions, everything has changed, you know? And so it's
before, 1928 was before the Second World War.
Yeah, well, there's a great depression, I know, but some people are saying...
No, you just got out of the trenches.
Yeah, but if you look back, and oddly, though, if you look back even at the inversion of the yield curve, it's worse than it ever was. If you go back to the 1980s, all I've got on that is 1980s, and right now it's worse than, you know, further back than that. So I think maybe you should go back.
If you look at the 3 month, 10 year US, you know, yield curve inversion, I think it's at about 1.5%. I mean, that's how negative it is. Yeah. And the worst is actually the 2 and the 10 is now starting to steep and to unwind some of that. And that's absolutely a categorical slam dunk that the recession or a slowdown is actually happening now. You know,
the Fed will say they're going to stay higher for longer. They will say that. Of course they will. But of course, their mandate is about employment and stable prices. So when one affects the other, And like I said, you know, employment is a lot more political and it's a lot more emotive than inflation. So what they're going to do, I mean, they're going to have to ease. And then so you may see, you know, fall off in the stock market and then a rally because of, you know, when the Fed starts to unwind a bit. So it's hard to sort of forecast this, isn't it, and see what's going on. All I would say is, you know, going forward, like you said there, raising money is essential for small macro-cap companies. So if you're researching companies, you know, it's paramount. You know, to tell them that they have lots of cash. You know, I mean, they have lots of cash because they don't.
All they've got such a really strong business model. They're going to be able to get it. You know, it's one of the two anyway. But I mean, you can get into this doom loop, and I think you've taken you've got the broader shoulders, and you've taken the more sort of like, you know, correct view. Yes, the data may be not looking great, but actually, when push comes to shove, what are the central bankers going to do? And it does get political. And the other sort of like thing that, I mean, I've been having a lot of sort of like Twitter sort of ping pong with a guy called Cockney Rebel, who I think is Richard Crowe. He was a really good guy. He's basically a bull. And I've been that sort of reluctant bear sort of guy. And he's been battering me to a certain extent. But one thing which really does sort of underscore his sort of more optimistic view is actually PE ratios in the UK. I mean, I looked at it, you know, it came from JP Morgan. It's 10 times forward earnings. So you're not exactly paying a rich price. Admittedly, most of them are sort of oil and banks and all this sort of stuff. But there is definitely lots of value. And I mean, one company that I've just sort of had a good look at, just on a desktop review, and I wrote an article earlier in the week, is Supreme, which is basically an FMCG sort of like, you know, 100 million market cap business that has got its own brands, one in vaping and one in sports nutrition. It licensed some in as well in terms of batteries and lighting, and then also it distributes some other FMCG businesses. But about 70% of its revenue is about its own brands or those licensed in. And it's trading at a ridiculously low level. I mean, it's about 9 times this year's earnings, et cetera. And it's got a cash flow yield of about 9%, 10% for this current year. So it generates a lot of cash. It makes 10% EBITDA margin. It's growing its top line double digits. And so when you look at it through that lens, you say, well, why is the share price so low? Well, frankly, because the market has just decimated small cap stocks. Yes, it had a couple of sort of like blips earlier in the year in terms of its lighting division and its sports nutrition. I think the price of whey protein went up in its sports nutrition and therefore took out some of the margin in that area. And then likewise, it had some overstocking with some of its supply. I mean, basically, it supplies all the major sort of like, you know, discount retailers because it works at the sort of the more budget end of the market for vaping and for, you know, for batteries and for lighting and stuff like that. So that's why, you know, it's a good play. If we do go through and we are, you know, people trading down, you know, people are going to move towards the more sort of like, you know, the value brands. And this one's doing well. I mean, double digits going to be growth next year. And gross margins in its biggest division, I mean, it makes 50% of its revenue in vaping. It's the 88 vaping brand. And it makes sort of like that's about half its revenues, but it's the biggest generator in terms of gross profits, and it's about 38% at the half year, and probably going to go up to about sort of 40%. So it generates sort of like, you know, much more of the value of the business. And I did a sum of the parts, and I think the shares are currently trading at about 95p. But frankly, I mean, I did a detailed or desktop sum of the parts, and I was getting at £1.69. Most of that was going to be in their own brands, obviously in the, you know, sort of like the sports nutrition and the vaping, and just logically, you know, if you've got an own brand FMCG, it's got barriers to entry, it's got, you know, sort of brand loyalty. It's got, you know, sort of like resilience because it's got a decent pricing power and it's got decent margins. Say 10%, you know, EBIT margin, or 10% plus EBIT margins. And the other good thing about it is that, and I want to speak to the actual management team because I think they've got a trading update at the end of April, I think it is, because that's their year end. But you know, they've shown, demonstrated that they're really, you know, into the cost cutting and making sure that it's a really tight ship in terms of that cash and the cost side of it. And they're moving into a bigger distribution outlet in Trafford Park in Manchester, and that will sort of reduce some of their cost base and their logistics costs. So, yeah, I mean, it's again, it's just there's quite a few of them. But this is, in my view, as a summary, I mean, this is sort of like a, you know, super durable growth stock that has got, you know, real defendable sort of like, you know, economic moat there, because, you know, it should do very well in a sort of like a tougher time. And I think it will next year. And just to give you an indicator, I mean, mine's to say, well, 169 is my valuation. But I know that the brokers have got between 170 and 180, both of them. So, you know, there's plenty, it seemed to be plenty of upside compared to a share price at 95p.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? At the moment, there's a lot of, you know, companies around that have growth and are of decent value. Now, you have go back 18 months and you wouldn't see the value side of that at all. So, and I think that's the way forward. You've got to be very strict now on valuations, because if the market takes another downturn, will this company be hit? And you think, well, no, they're hardly valued in anything, so they can't be, you know? Yeah. So,
And they've got a rock solid balance sheet as well. I mean, their net debt to EBITDA is about, I mean, I worked it out, it's about 0.4, and it'll probably be zero by the end of this current calendar year, which starts on the 1st of April for them. And they did actually just sell one of their sort of like smaller vaping brands to the French guy, sort of a French outfit, and they've just they paid them about 4.5 million, I think, euros for it. So they've got valuable brands. I mean, typically an FMCG brand, you know, which you own and is growing, is easy 15 times PE. Easy. Anybody's money. I mean, Unilever and Colgate and all these kind of guys have been on about 18, 19, 20 times. So one which is growing faster than the market and making good margins with a good recognizable name and with international sort of opportunities. And, it's a no-brainer. Well, it seems very, very sort of well-priced, and particularly when the whole company is generating 10%, you know, cash flow yield. So isn't generating a lot of cash. It is.
Yeah. But do you know what would be interesting to see if it is a dislocation between the US and UK markets? Traditionally, it doesn't tend to happen. We tend to, you know, incentive-wise, go down. But like you say, the valuations are very different, you know, now. And does that play into anything? Because I'm seeing a lot of companies come from oversold. We've seen a lot of technical bounces from companies that are completely undervalued, and they've rallied strongly from being massively oversold. And in fact, Sieta's one of those. You know, they had cash there, good contracts.
Yeah, they came out with some good news, didn't they?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And well, exactly. Well, I picked up some Sieta. I just thought,
oh, well done.
Yeah. Well,
you motored into that stock.
Yeah. it was literally almost a sub 20 million market cap. They had nearly half that in cash.
Yes.
A runway for up to next year, and some big contracts landing, a very hot space. And I thought, you know, they just seem like they're oversold and with a good potential. So I took some, and it did bounce. And it's the same with Verici as well. I just thought they were like 10 million with $9 million of cash. I thought they got a runway to 2024.
Oh, well done.
I know. And I thought, that's nuts. And at this stage, you've got these companies become so. And I think it's worth having some cash on the sidelines. So looking at companies that have, you know, a good long term prospects here, they've got cash, but they're massively oversold and the markets are growing. And so, you know, I've seen a few of those around, and I just think it gets a silly valuation. Verici at one point was like 11 million market cap or 10 million. They're like $9 million in cash. What?
Yeah, well, you must have done pretty well out of both of those, because Verici is now more than doubled, and I think Sieta's probably about 2.5 times.
Yeah, well, I think Sieta, they were it was up 98% at one point. I was up on them, and Verici was up, yeah. So, what is it?
I mean, whilst you've been away, actually, Sieta came out with some good news this week. I mean, they just won another contract, which was out of the blue, actually, because I didn't realise they were speaking. But it was with electric urban delivery vehicle manufacturer out in the States, Aeron, I think it is, or Iron, for 3,000 e-drive units, which will be delivered from, they'll be manufactured in Sunderland and then delivered out over the next sort of like 18 months, starting, I think, September, October time. It's a £5 million plus contract, but that's just the initial one. So with a bit of luck, if you get onto a platform like that and, you know, the OEM is successful selling these sort of like urban delivery electric vehicles into the States, then that will just carry on. So, and again, it's another fabulous endorsement by a first-class sort of electric vehicle manufacturer. The technology is excellent, and they can manufacture it, and they can, you know, deliver it. Because obviously, you know, you might have brilliant technology, but if you're the logistics and the actual supply chain to not actually be able to do it on time, within cost, to meet the ship, you know, shipments with a customer just in time, then you're going to fall down, because it really is, you know, the automotive industry expects high standards. And so, you know, Saito can do that. And they've got the credibility because the management team, et cetera, is just full of, you know, automotive guys who have been there for years and done it throughout, you know, with Jaguar and from Ford and Coswell and all these kind of guys. So, I think that, as you say, it's a baby in the bathwater kind of stock. It's been pretty much rocky with lots of others. But that's another, as I say, it's another great contract that they've got on top of the one, obviously, in India they have with through their joint venture. They've got lots of opportunities there, in fact, and or out in Asia. And then they've got the Commet one, which is in North America as well, for the big heavy duty sort of, like, you know, truck and trailers. So, plenty to go for. I think. I mean, who knows? But, you know, you have basically their house broker, I think, Canaccord, have got a £1.20 on it, you know, so plenty of upside. It was over £2 not long ago. And it's just the way the market changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, like I say, the bear market can present excellent opportunities. I just think, don't go too crazy in stocks, but if you're holding for a long time, you know, and I just think that it's a growing market, excuse the pun, but, you know, gaining traction there. And
it's electrifying performance.
Yeah, exactly.
Not all stocks are going to do your 90%.
It's going to be sort of volatile a little bit because it's risen. If you look at the chart, it's amazing. You've gone from massively oversold in the RSI to now a bit overbought. So it's going to consolidate a little bit, but it shouldn't. I don't think it'll revisit those lows again. So it's just having a bit of patience, you know. I think it's lots of, I mean, how much cash do you have now? I mean, are you having a lot of cash or?
No, well, I topped up my stake, or got a full position in Pfizer, as I mentioned about 6 weeks ago. And I bought a full position in Roche as well. So I've got, that's about 10% of the portfolio. I've got another sort of 10-15% in other healthcare, which is Amrit Pharma, which is in the process of being taken out. And then I've actually still got about 30% in cash. So I've still got plenty that I need to deploy. I'll be doing that over the next few. The problem I have is that, you know, because I put quite a bit of money into each one, it's quite difficult to actually get that liquidity. You know, anything less than 100 million market cap is really a bit of a struggle, actually.
In fact,
250 million is, you know, I mean, not that I've got any of that kind of money, but you only need a small amount in this market liquidity, and you then sort of, like, you just struggle to, about, you know, get the money into the company.
Yeah, no, do you know what? It's one of the things I did. I mean, after having a lot of microcaps and you realizing in a bear market, the liquidity really, you know, dries up and you find it hard to exit if you want to. Mm. One of the things I've done for my spreadsheet literally is add, you know, average daily volumes on the spreadsheet and even break it down and say,
good.
Listen, yeah, and even and say, if you are looking even to get, you know, look at the average daily volume, and if you're looking to sell at even a tenth of that in one go, you may struggle in a down market. So I always look at average daily volumes now in smaller cap stocks and thinking, okay, this is how much I can put in, really. Is it worth it? You know, or rather go to a bigger stock that has more liquidity. But
how much cash are you holding at the moment?
35%.
Oh, we've got about the same then. So you've still got plenty to deploy as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it'll be a rocky ride. I did say a while back, I think the S&P will go up and down. I don't know if it'll fall off a cliff, but I don't think it'll rise above, you know, much above 4,100. And I think and the rest of the market could be like, but it's a market of stocks, isn't it? There's always opportunities out there. And when you hit the bottom of the trading range, like I said, you'll get the bears saying, we're going to new lows. And then it'll probably rally back up to highs. You get the bulls saying new highs. And I don't think any of them are right for a while. I think it'll just go between that trading range for a long time until we see a definite trend in inflation come down. I don't know, talking about your videos and why people should watch them, a while back, it must have been maybe a year back, I think, you were interviewing Gervais Williams, and he talked about Couth. And since then, I had them on my watch list for a while. It's a digital mental health app with also people behind the app as well you can talk to. But I've watched them for a while, and when I did, you know, they were sort of relatively sort of high evaluation when he mentioned them. And I thought, I see it's a nice, you know, area, and a very hot area, but I can't, you know, sort of justify that valuation. But it's come down with the bear market, you know, completely come down. And so they did a sort of deal in Pennsylvania, digital health, and it was a pilot for sort of 3 million, I think it was. And I think they're the biggest. I think they're the biggest provider in the UK as well. Ethmark.
Oh, they're very well respected in the UK. Yeah. My wife works at a local school, and they use them for, you know, for basically the mental health support. And they're a class act. I'm with you.
The largest single access provider for mental health support under 18. So we know it's a growing area. Even though for my kid in school, they have actually dedicated now staff for mental health and well-being, all that stuff for children who are, you know, are not performing in certain ways. So I thought it's a growing area massively. And they announced that contract. They haven't announced the detail on the contract yet, but in California. And you realise the size of California. You think, so California, if you look at it, geographically is bigger than Britain. You know, I mean, population-wise, it's more than half the population of Britain. So it's like 40 million population. And you can imagine in California, they're very forefront of this kind of mental health and well-being. So I'm you know, looking forward to seeing this. But I did get in on the day of that news. I'm up a little bit on it. But
well done. So you've actually bought a position, have you?
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, not much liquidity in the stock, so I couldn't really buy anything. But I do quite like them. I think, you know, it's risen very quick on that news, but hopefully maybe it'll come back a little bit. And
I like it. Yeah, I'm with you, yeah. I mean, just to give an indication on the size of California, if you just sort of stripped it out and looked at its economy, it's one of the world's top biggest, will be one of the world's biggest economies, just straight on its own, if not in the sort of like, you know, top seven, top eight. So it's absolutely enormous. And you're right. I mean, it's basically shifting their mental health sort of like telemedicine platform out into the States. I mean, it's tried and tested in the UK. So effectively, operational gearing should be enormous, and the drop throughs likewise. And then once you've actually got one toehold or beachhead into such a big market, I mean, you know, if it works in California and Pennsylvania, they'll start recommending it elsewhere, won't they? And it's a matter of then sort of rolling out. Admittedly, it is competitive. It isn't as though it's totally sort of like, you know, game to them, and it's open. But once you've actually got that sort of like level of trust, schools and higher education outlets won't just give this to somebody who hasn't done it before. It's got you've got to have that kite mark. You've got to have that, basically, the endorsements and the blue chip customers. So I think I think you're in a good position there.
I mean, and what I like as well, I mean, as yet they're not making a profit, but I think they lost, what is it, half a million. They got like, let me just see. So they got plenty of cash. They got like 8 million or 8.5 million of cash, no debt whatsoever. They grew top line by 21%. And they're not, you know, losing a lot. It's like half a million or something. So a year. So
the growth will be massive on that. You'll find it. But the operational gearing will be brilliant, because, you know, for every, I don't know, dollar they stick onto the top line, I bet you they, operationally wise, they'll get 40 cents out of that, every single dollar, easy. And that will just flow straight to the bottom line, because they haven't got any overhead for it. Well, not all little anyway.
So there's a three little in Microcraft size sort of taken a position in recently, but
I mean,
not going massive on any of them really. I mean, in fact, I did average up on Seattle, and I've done quite well still. I think there'll be a little bit of sideways play unless they announce some more contracts. But in fact, that interview did with Tony Gott, he was pretty much very confident of more contracts coming from India. So maybe towards the back end of the year, who knows? But
it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, let's be clear about it. You know, if somebody bought sort of like Verici or Saieta, because they've got great technology and they've got lots of IPR and they're well set up. And you know, you could see somebody like, you know, Dana or GKN buying Saieta, because they'd get the e-drive straight away and the customer, and they'd have some customers, and they've got even a bigger footprint themselves, and it would solve their e-drive problem. And then Verici, I mean, you know, there's so many diagnostics businesses out in the States. It would just be a beautiful bolt-on for them. So strategically, an M&A, who knows? But they're so badly, it's so mispriced in a lot of stocks. We've seen it through Supreme, and, you know, we've talked about Seattle and Verici. Wouldn't be surprised, you could get 100% premium straight away, because, you know, it still is a bargain for the other people. I mean, another one which is in that healthcare sector, is OTC healthcare products, is Venture Life, and they came out with prelims this week. And again, I mean, yes, the shares went up, et cetera, and I think they're trading now, 43p, and they were about 38, I think. But, you know, they're in a really good position, because the top line is growing at double digits. They've got operating leverage, because, you know, they're getting a better mix effect of their own products, because that's growing, you know, that's basically expanding in terms of the acquisitions they've been doing. So they'll be getting high gross margins. And they've still got plenty of spare capacity in their manufacturing. So when they start bringing, when they get that growth and bring in more sort of business and stuff like that, that will gain drop down to the bottom line. And they're, I mean, there's all the numbers are good in terms of top line and margins and all this sort of stuff. But the number one which just stands out, and if you are a fundamentals numbers guy, and unfortunately I do fall into that camp, just look at the cash flow yield on it. And it's for this year, it's roughly at about 14% cash flow yield. That is hard pence, pounds, and tenors going to the bottom line. This is not funny money. This is 14% cash. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's absolutely just a gold mine. So
it's funny.
You know,
it's funny. I've seen more people paying attention in the bear market. You've seen more people now learning about, you know, free cash flow and saying, okay, well, that's the real thing we should be looking at now in this bear market, because that's real cash coming to the bottom line, and knowing that the assets increase. So if you want to be, like I said, belt and braces, you know, look at, you know, like I said, the cash generation margins on that, and see, that's what I want. The company generating lots of cash. That's the way forward for a while, I think, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, and the broker. I mean, it's house brokers. Was it Singers increased their target price from 72p to 84 on the back of it? And you can see one. That's basically, you know, 43p today. I mean, that's almost double your money from current levels. And I think they'll get there basically. And it was funny because I posted something on Twitter about the results, because I was pretty much flabbergasted how good they were, and I got a bit of abuse by a guy, you know, talking about sort of like, you know, oh, you know, we'll never get, you know, it'll take more than a year to get there. And I was thinking, like, I don't care. What if it takes 3 years? That's still a return of nearly 30% per annum. And I was thinking, don't miss the big picture here, because if the direction of travel is up and the value is there, and importantly, because they bought this, they bought a company just before Christmas, HL Healthcare for about £13 million, and so their net debt is at about 1.4. It was at year 1.4 EBITDA. It's come down in the first 2 or 3 months to 1.3. So you can see, that's because of the cash generation. And it'll hit sort of like one or less than one by the end of the year. So they're generating a lot of cash. You look at it and you just say, well, okay, you know, give it 2 years and they'll have no debt. They'll be growing at double digits. They'll be making margins of, and when I interviewed the CEO, Jerry Randall, you know, they could well be making EBITDA margins of 25%. Stick a bit of flipping, you know, depreciation, which is not much on a factory, you know, you're getting 20% sort of like, you know, EBIT margins or adjusted EBIT margins, which is what they should be getting, because that's what OTC healthcare companies generate. And if they do that, I mean, it's a totally different ball. It goes over a quid, no problem at all, just on the pure fundamentals, given the cash and the, you know, the value. I mean, even on these lower multiple, lower estimates, it's still trading at less than 6x EBITDA. And that is cash profits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's funny, isn't it? People, obviously, you say to people, listen, if you can see this, that if you're doing your research in a company and they have visibility towards those kind of figures, but it is in the share price now, what are you waiting for? You know, because right now, if you want to get, it's the same kind of thing with the house builders. You know, eventually they'll get back to, you know, preeminent performance, you know, good performing businesses. But there's a lot of worry in the markets. Yes, but that's what gives you the discount. You know, you're not going to get a discount in a bull market. So if you're happy to hang on and let your fundamentals improve, and a bit of volatility will happen, yes, but you don't overexpose, you know, you're fine. And that's why, you know, if things like I said, some of the companies I'm in now that pay dividends, it's nice to have some dividends paid to you while you're waiting. Doesn't bother me. Yeah. I know they'll get back to, you know, being good companies, but it's just sitting there for a while, isn't it?
Well, you got that strategy perfectly right, didn't you, during the pandemic when it first kicked off at sort of March, April time. You convinced me to a certain extent to be a bit more optimistic, and then I sort of like came in after you, because, you know, sometimes you do have to, you know, look through the short-term turbulence, invest while there's blood on the streets when everybody's panicking. And if you do that and choose, you know, correctly, then you do make out very well. I mean, I didn't do as well as you, but, you know, it's taking that... It's going where nobody else was prepared to go on the right reasons on a selective basis, isn't it?
Yeah, I can see. You know, one of them, so we talk about Money Supermarket, that, and I can't see it is hitting sort of a 52-week high recently. But I'm tempted to just go a bit bigger on that, because I'm thinking, why isn't it rallying harder? Because let's be honest, we all see, you know, energy markets coming back into being offered, deals coming out. The rest of the business is doing great. They pay a nice dividend. And I'm thinking, and it's okay, even though it's 50 weeks out, it's still way below where it was a few years back. And I'm thinking, it's a good business, you know. It's a really good business.
And it could get taken out. I think, I mean, when I looked at it, I mean, maybe a bit slightly lower now, but that's a 10% cash flow yield as well.
Yeah.
So the amount of money that spins out, it's just like a money machine for a big cap company. I mean, it's over £1 billion, isn't it? You know, the market
1.3,
cap.
1.3, I think,
I mean, I'm with you. You know, and you need that kind of solidity in your portfolio as well, because it helps you sleep at night when you've got sort of volatility elsewhere. So I'm with you. I mean, another one, which is, I mean, it's my biggest position, and they came out with results prelims about 2 weeks ago or 10 days, is Equals. And this is this sort of like, you know, e-payments international sort of straight through processing platform run by Ian Stratford Taylor and Richard Cooper. And, you know, I've interviewed them many a time, and I was just flabbergasted how good the results were. Absolutely brilliant. Not only sort of last year's, but even more impressively this year, because given the turbulence, they did like-for-like revenue growth in the first quarter to date of over 50%. I mean, that is just tremendous, driven by revenue per working day just going through the moon. And they've got their solutions business is just like, you know, I mean, it was the whole platform. This is the big picture. The whole platform was designed as, you know, sort of like leading bank grade technology stack to do straight through processing for small, medium businesses. It's making it because it's so flipping good. Large corporates are using it hand over fist. And they're saying to Equals, we want to use it more, particularly for our overseas businesses. And what they've done, you know, they've been working behind the scenes, you know, pretty furiously on their M&A strategy. And they've just bought a business out in Belgium, Unix. And that's subject to obviously being cleared by the regulators there. But with a bit of luck, it'll happen in sometime in Q2. This could just absolutely transform the business in 2024, because they've got large corporates in the UK who want to use the service and are demanding to use the service in Europe. Europe is what, 4 or 5 times, maybe 6 times bigger than the UK market. They're going to follow their existing customers in there, and they're going to hire hopefully a crack sales team. I mean, this technology stack that they have, I mean, they're making, you know, they're doing a run rate by the end of this year. It could well be up to, you know, by the exit run rate, a quarterly run rate of sort of 24, 25 million pounds sterling by the end of 2020. That's 100 million just in the UK. Just think what they could do in Germany, France, Belgium, you know, Italy, Spain, all this sort of stuff. So, I mean, you know, you can get too positive about it. And after COVID, I've had a cold bath and douse myself. But I've, you know, my fair value is over £1.60. You've got Canaccord at 164, and you know, I just think it's on a great track record. They're doing really, really, really well. They're doing not only are they hitting it organically, but they're really absolutely, you know, knocking the ball out of the park when it comes to sort of like the M&A side. And that beachhead into Europe, assuming it's going to get sort of approved, which I think it probably will, then, you know, next year, 2024, could be a real... I mean, I actually think it's an inflection point already. But I think 2024, if they can get that Belgian business working, would just be just incredible.
Just bounce back. Now, it's closed at 79 pence on the 21st of March. Really a big dip, didn't it? In fact, we talked about the chart last time, saying, but now the good news is it's bounced back up, and the share price is on the 200-day moving average. It went way below that, but it's now bounced back up. So it's back in recovery mode. In fact, do you know what? Next time I think we talk, the results out from Argentex will be out on the 12th, I think.
Oh, they will. Yeah, we both own them, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. So that should be. That's a bit of a. That can be a bit volatile, can't it? So it goes up and down. What's going on with Argentex? It's not true. I suppose liquidity is all it is, isn't it, really?
I haven't seen any small, medium cap company which hasn't been volatile over the last 12 months. Yeah. It's sort of crazy, isn't it? Every single one, everyone in my portfolio, even if they're coming out with blockbuster numbers, Equals, Argentex have been knocking the ball out of the park. Every single one goes up and then comes down as people use it as an ATM, don't they? Essentially what's happening. And all it is the business's intrinsic value is going up, but the shares aren't sometimes going up as fast. And that means it's actually better value because on a multiple basis, it's much cheaper. But I'm with you. I mean, you know, we'll wait and see what Harry Adams, the CEO, has to say. But I think Argentex will have done really well, particularly out of the sort of like, you know, maybe the volatility which has been happening. But, you know, I mean, they're moving into, well, they've got obviously that beachhead in Europe, and they've got the one out in Australia, and they're putting on the tech platform as well, making real such good strategic progress. So, I think they'll come up with some good news for me and you with a bit of luck.
Yeah, cool. Anything else happening?
Well, I mean, we had massive news yesterday for Avacta. They basically, they were, as you just one of their lead drug candidate, chemotherapy warhead, AVA6000, et cetera, they got approval by the UK regulators to do this phase 1A, 1A study up to a cohort of four because they thought that was the maximum. Well, it's actually happened. It seems as though the drug is working certainly on a safety and a tolerability better, much better than anyone expected. And they had to go and seek approval to do a cohort five, which they've got. And the news yesterday was they've just started dosing the first patient in cohort five with essentially 250 milligram of doxorubicin in this AVA6000 sort of, you know, pro-drug format. And what that means, it's roughly around about 2 to 3 times stronger potency-wise than standard doxorubicin. They've had, you know, no problems, obviously, with safety and tolerability, and they've already demonstrated through the biopsies they've done that the doxorubicin chemo warhead is actually being, you know, ingested within the tumor. Now, they're not testing at this stage in the phase one the efficacy. Deliberately, they're not doing efficacy because they want to get to the maximum tolerated dose. So that's the key objective of 1A. And then when they go into then 1B, they'll then work through or start working through what the optimum dose is going to be for patients. Because this is doxorubicin is basically a well-known, tried and trusted chemotherapy, which stops the sort of replication and growth of tumors, you know, hard tumors in people. And the best, most effective way is to basically to do, you know, it seems to be you're doing the number of cycles at the right level of sort of potency, and they'll come out, and that's the idea. That's going to be the objective of 1B, and then to refine it and to get a view in the phase two trials. But overall, yeah, I mean, absolutely fabulous results, because what it means is that the, you know, the actual drug itself is working. We know that as designed. And once they've actually got that maximum tolerated dose, we'll move then into the phase one to get that optimum dosing level. But this could be a total game changer, because at the moment doxorubicin or that area, that market size is about just over $1 billion. But that's because it's limited, because doxorubicin you're going to use for about 6 cycles per patient, because it's so toxic without this prodrug format, without like the AVA6000s. Once you put it with AVA6000, the hope is that actually you're going to be able to extend the use of doxorubicin for patients. They have a much better quality of life. They're not feeling terrible all the time, tired and lethargic and stuff like that. And the market, that, I mean, who knows how big the market could get to, but if it's $1 billion and you've been restricted to 6 cycles per patient, this and you could carry on doing, you know, cycles with the AVA6000, it could get to significantly higher. But anyway, that was brilliant.
It's well followed, isn't it? Whenever it's an RNS, it's always the most read on Vox. And it's a lot of a faithful crowd there. And I just got an alert on Seattle. It's now at up its highest close, actually. Well, it's not closed today, but it's 59 pence now. So that's even higher. It went up to...
You've been buying again. What have we been talking? You've been buying, haven't you?
No, it went up to 69 pence intraday a few days back, but it didn't close. It closed at like 57 pence, but now it's at 59 pence. So there's momentum back in there. Yeah, yesterday that dropped. Like, do you know what's annoying? When you get on a flight and I looked at my shares, most of them were okay. Half of them were up. You know, some was going nowhere. A couple were down. And I got off a flight, they'd flipped. Most of them were down. And I thought, what's going on? Yeah. And like I said, it was down 11%. I thought, I know it's going to be a little bit volatile because it's bounced a lot from oversold position. But it's recovered the next day. It's now up 17% a day. Liking that. So, in fact, you know, one other thing I should say, I've mentioned them before, but I have taken a little position in, pharma companies, Destiny Pharma. Because I just think because they've got two late-stage assets in sort of infection prevention. They're both going into sort of phase three. In fact, one is funded. That's the M3 of theirs. They did a sort of deal. It could be worth up to 570 plus million plus royalties. So that's partnered now, so they have no financial obligation for phase three. And their second asset, which is XF73, that basically it's a bigger market opportunity for them. It's about a billion peak sales, which is double the M3 they've done a deal on. Plus, they own it outright, which they don't with the other asset. And just looking at when I first read this, I thought, this is what? I looked at three brokers who've got targets on this, okay? And Equity Development, 267, FinCap, 285, Shore Capital, 290, share price at 28 pence. I thought that is, but it's just the potential of those drugs, and they've got cash as well because part of the deal they did with Sabana Pharma, so they had to raise cash. So they've got about 9 million in cash, which will see them through for over a year. But they're hoping to get a deal done on the second asset within this year, and I think they will. But it's a 28 million market cap. It's like it's nuts at the moment. Like I said, I've seen companies not even in phase one on one asset a lot higher market cap than this. They've got two assets going into phase three, and one's done a deal on one. And I just think it's one of those. I haven't gone nuts on it. I just think when the market recovers a little bit and money starts coming back in, companies like this could really rally because they're almost there on two late stage assets in big sort of markets.
I mean, more than I do in sort of Destiny Pharma, but being a sort of biotech company, that looks like medically or clinically insane, doesn't it? That valuation.
I keep looking at it again. Why they've got cash? What's the problem? It's commercially, the markets are quite big.
It's just bonkers, isn't it? Absolutely bonkers.
It's just I think people are saying, baby and bathwater stuff. Everyone's just throwing the. And it didn't help. They did it. People were expecting that first deal to come out, and I think people are buying. But they didn't realise that they do a fundraise as well. So they did the fundraise, which was a little bit of a discount. And I think that hit sentiment massively. But now that worry about any money is removed. And so let the story play out this year. Should see another deal come in for them. And I think, like I said, it'll be bigger than the first deal. So that could be very significant. But
another one in that healthcare space, again, sort of like, clinically insane valuation in terms of it just being sold off, is Bellascura. They came out with a good trading update. Yes, they're all on track in terms of what they're doing. So they're looking for about, I think it's about 12,000 units for this year, and they did about just less than 2,000 last year. So there's lots of growth, but they're on track to do that. Their Chinese manufacturers now started producing these, the portable oxygen concentrators as well, and that will service an enormous sort of Asian market. Plus, their new model, which is going to be launched, I think in Q2, got the sort of an award at a really big sort of medical conference out in the States as well. So, they've just raised a bit of money in terms of convertible debt. They've got the cash runway. The products are doing well. And again, I mean, the shares have recovered, but they're still a long, long, long way from where they should be. There's no doubt about it. And anyway, we'll wait and see. They've got their prelims coming out probably sometime in Q2. But they're operationally wise, they're doing really well. I would hope that given all the distributors they've actually got out in the States, that should sell in well. Because there still is a massive market for COPD, treatments and for best-in-class portable oxygen concentrators.
Yeah. Again, there's other companies oversold. May see a bounce there,
I mean, the shares, what, are 42p now. They've recovered a bit from where they were. But you've got the house broker, Dowgate, are on 150. I mean, it's not quite as extreme as Destiny Pharma. It's right up there.
Yeah.
It just shows on sentiment.
I think things like this, I think, don't go crazy on lots of too many, but I mean, like a handful, five of these sort of really big, high potential stocks, and don't overexpose and just, do a bit of research on them. They've got cash. That's one of the biggest risks for small cap companies like this with, and then just sit and wait. And sometimes, and if one starts to really move, put a bit more into it. And, look at Seta. Once the momentum gets, is that 24%? Is it movement in these? It just goes nuts. Doesn't it? When you see, Verizon gets oversold.
Well, to be honest, actually, they've had some big volume going through. Yeah. A couple of millions I've seen, going through. So, let's be clear about it. It's first class, world leading technology, and if they can actually deliver, forget the pun, if they can actually sort of get that, maximize that, optimize that opportunity, then it's a £2, £3, £4 stock easy, no problem at all. Yeah. You've just got to be patient, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, another one on the tech side, just finally, which I own, which came out with some, good year-end trading, is FD Technology. And this is this one which has been talked about, which is the artificial intelligence business. There's a picks and shovels play. KX Insight, which is the crown jewel of that, which does real-time sort of like, you know, big data analytics. And you'll use that information to feed into your AI models. And it's being adopted by, you know, Microsoft Azure, and it's won a whole series of customers. I mean, you know, the brokers are for this currently just finished last year, and its ARR growth was 39%. Going into next year, the brokers were at 10% for it, yeah, because it's a harder environment. They're going to do 35%, they reckon, because it's just like, it's been really, you know, they've got not only the financial angle to it, but they've also got lots of other customers and clients in the sort of like, you know, manufacturing, in sort of like, you know, power distribution and all this sort of stuff, and healthcare. And that is absolutely just flying, that because, I mean, you know, you think about it, the AI guys are absolutely flying, and they need things that can actually give them the information in with a huge data set at the speed they require. And that's why, you know, the big sort of hyperscale cloud providers, the likes of sort of Microsoft, just wanted to get into bed with them. So that one's doing great. Their older business, First Derivatives again has come in strong, and they expect that to continue growing 10%. And then the problem child, which is only about 4 or 5% of revenue, is their MRP business. So when they came out of the trading update, the shares went up, and then surprise, surprise, they went down again. Yeah. So just because sentiment's so appalling. Yes. But I'm happy to hold that one for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, that's how I think you people should look at it over that longer term. Go into a position that you feel comfortable, that from what you can see at that particular time, 3 to 5 years, and you should do quite well. I mean, I, as you know, my number one, you know, position is in Equals, and I've held that, what, for 3 years now. I mean, I'd be happy to hold it for another 5, 10. Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's just been run so well, and you know, they've got the opportunity set is even bigger than it was. In fact, it's cheaper than it was when I first got in, because it's grown so fast. And the value and the shares haven't moved as far.
Well, that's it. I mean, the thing is, sometimes the share price. So after a bit, because it did very well, didn't it? Going back a while back, it rose very quickly. It needs time to sort of consolidate a little bit of indigestion, maybe, and then the business keeps improving, and then all of a sudden the valuations get more compelling, and in the end, the share price will catch up again, you know, and it'll move on. But you know, you can't just keep going up and up and up, and it's got to have a breather sometimes, you know.
Yeah. Another one, actually, we've got the results for Argentex for the next time we spoke, is K-Box. They've got a year-end result.
Okay,
and again, that's another one which is, it's come down again. It's just his baby in the bathwater. It generates so much flipping cash. I'd have to work the numbers, but I bet you it's high single digits, if not double digits, cash flow yield, you know, franchise business. Anyway, it's difficult. Let's see what the numbers are before I sort of like, you know, real, you know. But again, that's another high-quality branded company with, you know, sort of a good barriers to entry, generating lots of cash, good margins, and, you know, a passionate founder who absolutely wants to drive the business. In fact, the same is with Supreme. I mean, the guy there is, you know, Sandy Chajal. I mean, he's, you know, he started it man and boy, and he's taken it from 1 million turnover to next year, they reckon it's 150 wow. million from one. Well, that's not bad amazing. Going, is it?
I know. I always like to look at those, you know, founder sort of companies, because they've got a real passion for it, haven't they? You know, and they've got a skin in the game. And that's the thing. Marvellous. Is that it?
I think that's everything. Yeah, we've got plenty to cover, and there'll be another busy few weeks with all the results. And as I say, keep a close eye on the US earnings season, Q1, because it's going to be big beer, I think, at the end. Because if the banks start rolling over, then there'll be lots of bargains around.
yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff. Thanks for that. Paul, let's eat some eggs now. Chocolate eggs galore.
Oh, lovely.
And we'll speak in a couple of weeks. Cheers, fella.
Cheers, bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.